You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
In the summertime, when the weather is high, you can stretch right up and touch the sky. When the weather's fine, you got women on your mind. Have a drink, have a drive, go out and see what you can find. If a daddy's rich, take her out for a meal.
All right, everybody, hold on here. I guess I'm going out there. Okay, well, welcome to tonight's show as we continue our two-week special mini-series, TPC's Midsummer Review. We've done this for the last couple of years, and basically it's not too different than our regular shows. We just have some short mini-interviews, 30-minute interviews, pack in about a half a dozen guests in 2 weeks, and call it a mini-series. Not quite as defined as our March Around the World or, of course, our Confederate History Series, but we're having a good time anyway, and I really had a good time last week with, of course, Paul Angel, Tim Murdoch, and Paul Fromm. That received particularly good feedback from you, our beloved audience, and so we will continue this evening with a couple of more invited guests as we essentially assess where America stands as we start to turn the corner and head into the latter part of summer and get into the fall, and it's hard to believe this is another election year. We'll talk more about that later and where we were 4 years ago this week. We'll tell you all about it later on in this show as we continue. Keith, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great, my friend. Good to be here.
It is summertime, as Mungo Jerry sang, is it not?
Well, I tell you what, if you have any doubt, just go outside without air conditioning.
He wasn't lying to us. You know, I think I heard there was some hype at the time that Mungo Jerry was going to be bigger than the Beatles. Did you ever hear about that?
No, I never heard that.
Did it come true?
No, it didn't.
Serious question. Battle of the Bands, Mungo Jerry versus Sam the Sham.
Sam the Sham, hands down.
I got to go with you. I do like that song, but I guess that's his only song. Yeah, Sam the Sham. You know, I've told this story before. I remember Sam the Sham is from Memphis, and when I was a teenager, I was driving back in the Berkeley, he had moved from Berkeley, but he was out mowing his grass. And how many people can say, you know, you go by Sam the Sham, you see the Sham outside
mowing his grass? Where did he live? Out of curiosity.
He lived over on Tutwiler.
Okay. Yeah,
now,
back in the day.
Now, he has since moved, and I don't know where he is now. I mean, this was years and years ago, but in any event, great guy, great music. And
he was a Church of Christ pastor at one point.
He may still be.
Yeah.
Tex-Mex, Sam the Sham.
Yeah, he came from Texas, and I think his parents were Mexican immigrants. But he was really, really, he broke onto the scene through Memphis.
That's so many people did.
In fact, he's only one. Wooly Bully was, I think, the highest rated record that came out of Phillips Recording Studio. That was the successor of Sun Studios.
Now, we know who recorded at Sun.
Right, Elvis and Carl Perkins and Jerry Lee Lewis and Johnny Cash and Charlie Rich, Ed Al, you know, all of those people. Memphis really has a storied background when it comes to popular music. Think about people like Johnny Burnett. Well, they grew up in Berkeley, too, which is Tutwiler is in Berkeley. And
my grandparents lived on my mom's side, lived out in that neighborhood.
And furthermore, in addition to Johnny and Dorsey Burnett being from Memphis, you know, and they had You're 16, You're Beautiful, You're Mine, and Dreaming, and things like that. Well, next door, their next door neighbor was a little kid named Jimmy Griffin, who became one of the two big leading lights of the 70s band Bread.
Now, we probably could talk about this for the next 3 hours. It is the summertime, of course, and in the summer, I guess you get a little lazier and just kind of, you know, do your layabout routine, which is what we've done here for the first few minutes tonight. But no, You know, I think it's always fun to just sit back and have a little conversation before we get down to the hard work of the evening. No Sam the Sham songs in our intros and outros.
We'll get to that.
We can fix that, that's for sure. But no, you know, we like to save him for Halloween. You know, we do a little bit of that in October. Hey, let's jump into the mailbag very quickly if we can. I'm going to safeguard this person's anonymity, but we got a wonderful, wonderful letter from a lady listener over on the East Coast, and this is what she writes. What we love and we fear are linked, and our society is dying out of greed. For we love so much what we have that we have stopped loving God, that we fear dying so much, just watch the panic and the hysteria of COVID, because we love this life and this world too much. Let me offer you, my friend, the reading of St. John 15:19. If you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world. That is why the world hates you. Let the world hate you, my friend. It's all with in all its vanishing might, because it's temporal and finite, and eternity awaits only those with great humility and love, the true love for sincerity, for truth, and for our almighty God, Jesus Christ. So I pair that then with this, which reads, good morning. I just wanted to personally thank you for standing in the gap for those of us watching the world fall apart. My husband has been listening to your program for quite some time now, and I've recently begun to listen with him. I confess that for a long time I didn't think much about the issues you discuss, partly because I don't like conflict. I get scared and run from it whenever I can. This is a woman, a homemaker, speaking or writing. I worry so much for the future of my boys. They are already labeled simply because they are white Southern Christian young men. What will their future be like? Just wanted to let you know that I pray for you, and I greatly appreciate you being willing to talk about these things. Keith, I read those two emails to really illustrate the point, and we get so many pieces of wonderful correspondence every week, but those two just really, really, really stood out because it goes to show the heart of our listening audience. We bring the best of the best of America's people together. And if we did all this work for all these years, Keith, and we looked around and we saw that, you know what, what's going on here? All the people that seem to listen to this show, that we meet when we have gatherings and events for this show, and the people who write, man, I'd be ashamed to introduce these people to our families. Why are we attracting this caliber of people? But no, that is not the way it is. It's not the way it's ever been. And those two emails, I think, really cut to the heart of the matter. We bring the best of the best of the people together, the best people I've ever met in my life. You know, of course, outside of my family, are people that I've met through the work we do here. And I want to thank the people for sending in those letters.
And we're going to talk later in the show about what it is that ails them. For example, the last letter, the lady talked about how she fears for her sons that they're being labeled and castigated and vilified just for being white Southerners. So why is that? We're going to unpeel that onion layer by layer.
I'm looking forward to that. Keith's got a really good presentation for you that's going to be coming up in the second hour after we blitz through a few of the current news topics. But you'll want to stay tuned for that. We'll be talking about critical theory, applied Marxism, but we're not going to be doing it in a way that's going to make your eyes glaze over and your brain shut down. We're going to do it in a way that everybody can understand it, and it really is going to just really just lay it out perfectly how we got to where we are and what we can do about it. Hey, stay tuned, folks. Some opening banter now behind us. We're going to get down to brass tacks when we come back. Thanks for tuning in tonight. We'll be right back with you.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
TalkRight, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. TalkRight makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download TalkRight today from Google Play or the App Store.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, It Ain't Gonna Happen, a book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled M-E-J.com, or call Caritas in the U.S., 205-672-2000, 205-672-2000.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody ever having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly. But I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, Keith, one of the ladies from which we read a piece of correspondence from last segment was talking about how she fears for the future of her boys and the systemic racism that is going to be coming and applied, of course, to white people. Pat Buchanan wrote about that in his most recent column, and I'll just read an excerpt from this and then let you take it to town, Keith. Pat writes, "Before our Black Lives Matter moment, one had not thought of the NBC network as shot through with systemic racism," which, of course, he puts in quotation marks. "Yet what other explanation is there for this week's draconian personnel decision of NBC Universal chairman Cesar Conde? According to Conde, the white share of NBC's workforce, now 74%, and divided evenly between men and women, will be chopped to 50%. Persons of color, blacks, Hispanics, Asians, Native Americans, and multiracial folks, are to rise from the present 26% of NBC Universal's workforce to 50%. What does this mean? White men will be slashed as a share of NBC's employees from the present 38% to 25%, a cut of one-third, and then capped to ensure that people of color and women reach and remain at 50%. White men can fall below the one-fourth of the workforce, but their numbers will not be permitted to go any higher. To impose race and gender quotas like this one on the workforce at NBC, half women, half people of color, would seem to trample all over the spirit, if not the letter, of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. But whence comes this responsibility, the realization of which means active discrimination against new employees because they are the wrong gender or race, i.e. because they are unwanted white men," Pat Buchanan writes. And we have talked about this for years, Keith. The whole purpose of the so-called civil rights movement wasn't to bring equality under the law, but to have the races switch places. And we see it now. We were right about it then. Everybody sees it now. Your thoughts on Pat's commentary there?
Well, I wish everybody saw it now, but I'm afraid there's some people that still have their head stuck in the sand like an ostrich, thinking that if they can't see the problem can't see them. Meanwhile, the ostrich's posterior is waving around making a tempting target. And that's what's happening. This is cultural Marxism. These are the fruits of cultural Marxism.
Now give a little tease, because I don't want to get into that too deeply yet. We're going to talk more about that in the second hour. I think people are going to really enjoy that presentation, but of course you're right.
Well, this castigation and this marginalization of white males. I told you, and we've discussed this many times, that the Civil Rights Movement wasn't a benevolent movement. It wasn't about raising up black people. It was about hurting white people. And now you're seeing the rubber meet the road. It's coming down. A hard rain is going to fall, as Bob Dylan said. And, you know, you're going to be deplatformed. And what is delicious irony of this is that most of the people, most of the white males that work for NBC, CBS, ABC.
Oh, yeah. They're part of the problem, too.
Yeah, they think that they can, you know, they have what we call Passover syndrome. They think that if they support all of this loony leftism, that somehow they'll be left alone, but they won't. It's like Trotsky said, you may not be interested in the revolution, but the revolution is interested in you. And they're going to take them out, the useful idiots of the media, the white Gentiles in the media, sooner and faster than they could ever imagine. And they're going to sit there and be stuttering and sputtering, saying, but I've been such a good soldier in the movie. Well, that's fine. Go home and polish your medals up, but you don't have a job anymore.
That is exactly right. And, of course, again, applied Marxism, cultural Marxism, the Frankfurt School, all of these things, critical theory, which, again, we're going to be talking about in a little bit later in the show. But, you know, that's a big part of the problem. And of course, it's related to this. But another thing that's happening is, of course, we do not have any issue advocacy organizations. We do not have any organizations that stand up for the unique group interests of European Americans. And, of course, every other organization does. Now, this is so cliche. It's so basic. You know that. But if you're not allowed to have organizations, we don't have an ADL or an NAACP or a CNN. You know, we don't have any of that. And when you don't have the ability to stand up for yourself and to organize and to push back and have pressure groups, lobbying groups, pushovers get rolled. And that's exactly what's happening.
And people are sheeple now, as Michael Savage says. People, for example, are proving they're sheep with their reaction to the COVID-19 crisis. How many pastors have you seen stand up to be counted and say, we're not closing the doors of Christ's house because of this?
Is that rhetorical? I mean, I guess the answer would be a handful, right?
I said, all right, what are you, man or a mouse? I said, pass the cheese. You know, but see, this is another thing that I read this week is that in Hollywood, they're cutting back all the white roles. It's acceptable now to have non-whites playing white roles. And all these white actors that have been towing the line and kissing behind all the time for, you know, the last 50, 70 years, those people are now finding that they're going to be out of work. And, again, useful idiots wind up being the first casualties of the revolution.
I've got something that you're going to love. And it's hard to believe it's been this many years since that particular film came out. But just one more thing about not having an organization that stands up for you, you're going to get rolled every time. You have to be able to apply pressure on the institutions and on the system. If you're not applying pressure from your perspective, then you don't exist.
Well, it's what they call identity politics. We have to have identity politics as white Gentiles, just like Jews do, just like blacks do, just like Hispanics do, just like Orientals do, just like homosexuals do, just like women do, okay? If we don't do this, see, all of this coalition of the others is ganging up on us, but equality apparently doesn't extend to having a voice in the political process.
Well, that's the whole thing. They love diversity, but they don't love diversity of opinion, as we like to say.
Yeah, they say it's terrible and, you know, must be fought at every opportunity if white people try to have their own advocacy groups.
You were talking about the movies. I got to tell you this. About how whites are getting their roles cut, of course, and blacks can now play white, historically white characters. Whites, of course, can't. You know, we're not going to see Mel Gibson playing Martin Luther King in any upcoming film. But anyway, you remember the 2011 hit film? It was all the rage. The Help.
Absolutely.
Now, that's hard to believe that came out 9 years ago. Well, anyway, now The Help is being savaged. Everybody that made The Help, which was the toast of Tinseltown back then for really putting white Mississippians in their place and telling the real story about how how race relations were back in the 60s, don't you know? Well, now the help is being savaged because you had a female lead, Emma Stone, telling the story. And even the black characters in that were saying, oh, I can't believe I made that movie. We should have been the ones that were the stars and the ones telling the story. And everybody's ashamed of that movie now because it wasn't woke enough.
Well, nothing is ever going to be woke enough for today's emerging standards. George Washington isn't woke enough. Thomas Jefferson, Alexander Hamilton,
well,
Frederick Douglass,
I mean,
Father Sarah, Winston Churchill, Teddy Roosevelt. Anybody that is white who is a historical figure would not pass muster under today's
extreme brand of
political correctness.
I mean, that goes without saying, but I'm saying now the help can't even pass muster.
Well, if you remember, though, at the time, remember that the black woman that the character Abilene was in the movie was styled after, she brought suit against the white author. And the thing is, they want to totally control the narrative, and they want to deconstruct society. And society, history in America and in Europe is nothing but a sad and pathetic chronicle of bigotry and hatred and yada, 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 as they say on Seinfeld.
Bryce Dallas Howard, one of the stars, that's Ron Howard's daughter, says she wouldn't do the help today. We have to make room for the true, authentic storytellers. And then Viola Davis, on her role in the help, I feel like I betrayed myself and my people. Now, that movie was nothing but an anti-white screed. I can't imagine why
they had white people eating pie made out of feces, okay? So it wasn't really a great affirmation of white people and white goodness, but
I can't understand what their objection would be.
But Ron Howard's daughter, don't hold your breath waiting for another part in Hollywood, baby. It ain't happening.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
The White House Coronavirus Task Force is recommending that 18 states roll back reopening measures because of surging cases of COVID-19. But that appears in an unpublished report. The Center for Public Integrity obtained the report dated July 14th, just a few days ago. It's not clear why the task force did not release it. During what felt like a bit of a campaign-style event on the White House South Lawn yesterday, President Trump was touting his efforts to lift regulatory restrictions on business and industry nationwide.
For every one new regulation added, nearly 8 federal regulations have been terminated.
Republican-turned-independent Michigan Congressman Justin Amash says he will not be running for re-election and won't be seeking the Libertarian Party's presidential nomination. And this is USA Radio News.
Balance of nature, changing the world one life at a time.
I've had a lot of really great days back to back, which has been a huge blessing. Even my doctor told me, because they asked me to bring everything in that I take on a daily basis. He was very encouraged by seeing what I was taking. And he said he didn't care how many I had. You know, he said it's food. And the form that it's in was something that he was very, because he's an avid learner, and he's always researching, and he's always excited to see new things. And he told me, this would be good. This will help you immensely with the nutrition that you need.
Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order. Start your journey to better health today by calling 1-800-246-8751 or by going to balanceofnature.com and make sure to receive this special radio offer by using discount code USA.
The NFL calling sexual misconduct allegations against the Washington NFL franchise serious, saying it may take action. Releasing a statement after the Washington Post detailed harassment claims by at least 5 people inside the organization. The league is encouraging all parties to cooperate and will wait for the investigation to be completed. A game show host with an update on his health.
Game show host Alex Trebek gave viewers a health update for the first time in months. The legendary Jeopardy host told fans he's doing well.
I'm doing well. I've been continuing my treatment, and it is paying off, though it does fatigue me a great deal. My numbers are good. I'm feeling great. In fact, during the break from the studio, I even wrote a book that will be coming out July 21st.
Trebek announced he was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer on March 2019.
USA Radio's John Hunt there, and this is USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Could you go for a little summer snow right now?
I tell you what, if it snowed in the summer, it wouldn't be any more surprising than some of the development we've seen on in society over the last 6 months.
Well, let's do a little practice in what is racist and what is not. I mean, can we play that game for a second here in modern day America? Well, they got the Redskins, and first they came for the Redskins. It's like the Confederate monuments, and we all knew they weren't going to stop there. Well, they're not stopping with the Redskins either, so there's a story out now putting pressure on the Texas Rangers to change their name because they say the Rangers were basically the equivalent of Klansmen because the Rangers were a white supremacist organization. Now, what were the original Texas Rangers?
They're a law enforcement agency in Texas.
Now, why would they be akin to Klansmen and white supremacism by today's standards?
Because they punish criminals.
I mean,
or they apprehended criminals.
Can you imagine? And you know, Dan Snyder, the owner of the Washington Redskins, said many times he would never change the name. Well, of course, what eventually forced him to change the name was all of the sponsors were going to leave and pull up stakes and take out their money out of the franchise, including the FedEx, which has the naming rights to the stadium that the Redskins play in. And so God only knows what disastrous, embarrassing name they're going to be called next. But it doesn't stop there. Now they're putting pressure on the North Carolina Tar Heels to change their names. If people don't know, one of the reasons people are called Tar Heels was because the Confederate soldiers from the state of North Carolina were said to have held their ground in battle so well that they must have had tar on their heels, and that's why you get the name Tar Heels. So somebody else must have been aware of that fact, because now the University of North Carolina is being pressured to change its name. Don't tell anyone that Duke University was founded by a Confederate soldier himself.
Not David Duke, but
no, it was another one.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, though, it's just crazy. And furthermore, the useful idiots are going to go down just like they did in the Stalinist purges. Dan Snyder thought that he was going to buy himself some peace and quiet by caving in finally on the name. Not so fast, as Lee Corso would say, because now they apparently had the gun already loaded, thinking that he might not cave in. But like, you know, a typical American citizen of today, he caved in, so fast it'd make your head spin. But now he is, and the whole organization is being charged with these, you know, 40-year-old style sexual harassment complaints. It's going to be
Washington Redskins. They didn't curry. As soon as they capitulated to the mob, they got, you know, changed the name. Did they get a thank you?
The old 1-2 punch from the left, and you know, they must have gotten a hold of Jeffrey Epstein's login book for the Lolita Express, because you know, they seem to have this stuff on all of these people that are prominent in the media or in Hollywood or in sports. So, you know, just like we said, you can run, but you can't hide. These people, when they're out to get you, and they will get the useful idiots first, just like Stalin did.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about Duke University, because this is interesting, and I don't care if they change the name. In fact, you're dishonoring the namesake of Duke by having his name attached to that current cesspool that is the university. But Duke University is named after Washington Duke. And Duke was 40 years old, too old for the initial conscription into the service of the Confederacy. However, the second Confederate Conscription Act, passed in September of 1862, which increased the draftable age to 45, Duke, aware that he would soon be called into military service, held a sale at his home in October of 1863 to sell the entirety of his farm equipment, and then he enlisted in the Confederate Navy. He served in Charleston, South Carolina, and Richmond, Virginia, until he was captured by Union forces in April of 1865. He went to federal prison and then was paroled and walked 134 miles from the prison back to his home. And that is the namesake of Duke University, Washington Duke, Confederate soldier.
And is that the history that they're referencing in order to justify changing the name of the school or something?
Well, they haven't got on to Duke yet. What they're trying to change is the North Carolina Tar Heels for their...
Well, the other will be following Fast and Furious. Don't worry about that. But, you know, the shoe I'm waiting to drop is Yale University.
Oh, yeah.
Named after Elihu Yale, who was a prosperous citizen of Massachusetts or Connecticut, that area up there, New England, and was a slave trader. In fact, he was a slave trader that would have put Nathan Bedford Forrest in the shade. I mean, he brought over tons of people, or you know, hundreds of people, as slaves in America, which is kind of curious too, because they stopped the transatlantic slave trade in the original Constitution in 1808. So he really, I guess he predates that era, but I can't see all these Yaleys that just preen over saying the word Yale in association with themselves having to drop that. So I guess it's, you know, it's just like George Orwell, well, like Napoleon said, Napoleon the pig in George Orwell's Animal Farm, all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. So let's wait and see what happens to Yale University, whether they are made to change their name too.
Well, we'll see. Honestly, I wouldn't be upset at all. This certainly in the case in Yale, but it's very much true for SEC schools. I mean, these schools get so much of their funding and endowment from their sports. I would love to see all professional sports and all collegiate sports just die on the vine.
Well, I wouldn't be shedding a lot of tears over that either, but think about this. In addition to, you know, Yale and pieces like, and sports programs, I think that the continued viability of a lot of colleges and universities is going to be compromised to the point that a lot of colleges are going to be shutting their doors. Why would anybody pay the big money to go to Yale when you don't even show up and you can do it on the internet, and somebody will hack into it? So anybody can get, you know, it's really, this is poetic justice. All these organizations like the Ivy League schools and the SEC and football and whatnot that have cucked so hard to the left in the leftist viewpoint over the past, 50 years or so. Now they are clearly in the crosshairs of the left. And believe me, they could go down. Yale University probably has an endowment where they will weather the storm. But if they have to change their name, I mean, that's going to be a sullied brand. I wonder what they'll call it. Maybe Frederick Douglass University or something like that. But, but you know, this is that there are a lot of small schools, small religious schools, small private universities that have no affiliation with any religion or whatnot that are liable to go down the tubes because of COVID. They can't get students in,
and this thing,
they can't make money.
Man, I am telling you, I'm becoming increasingly convinced that this is just a beta test to see how many people will just take the mark of the beast as prophesied by the Bible. I mean, how easily will people accept whatever the state, whatever the television tells them to do. You're going to a cashless society. I've already seen a lot of places around town that won't accept
change.
I've seen it. There's some fast food places won't accept cash anymore. I mean, what are you going to do? You teach your kids to use a piggy bank to teach them financial responsibility. How's the tooth fairy? What's the tooth fairy supposed to do now? Leave your kid a check? All transactions are going to be monitored. But this thing, I can tell you, I don't know exactly what it is. It could be a combination of things. Getting Trump out, we've talked about this. A beta test for something more sinister. It could be just to see how conformist people will be, how cowed they will be. There could be something in this vaccine that's coming. I don't know exactly, but I know this. It isn't because this virus is so deadly that they're so concerned. As I've said before, they shouldn't have shut anything down for this, much less everything.
Well, as Hamlet said, something's rotten in the walls of Denmark, for sure. And this is really what is happening. I think that the reason Trump derangement syndrome is so severe on the left is that they really had targeted 2016 to 2020 as the time in which they totally transformed America and Western society. He came in, he wasn't one of them, he couldn't be relied on it, but they've decided to heck with it. We've got enough governmental power that we're going to do all of this in spite of it.
Folks, when we come back, we have a very difficult story to share with you, but we're going to share it just the same. We'll be right back.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
folks, of course, you know, I wrote a book 10 years ago. It was 10 years ago last month about, well, it's, of course, called Racism, Schmacism, and it talks a lot about how they're using the R word. Again, all this goes into what we're going to be talking about next hour with critical theory and whatnot, but a lot of examples in that book of what is racist and what isn't. And, of course, it's just, you can basically say now that everything is racist. Everything is racist. White people, most of all, are racist, and all white people are racist. The book was before its time, ahead of its time. And anyway,
prophetic, in other words, really.
Man, if I didn't know, it's like a friend said, I thought we'd reached as bad as it was going to get with regards to how crazy the whole racism scheme had gotten, but it just goes to show how little imagination I have. Anyway, let me tell you a very difficult story. This apparently is not racist. This wasn't racist at all. This was just something that happened. Black Lives Matter supporters murdered a white woman this week for saying that all lives matter. A young white mother was killed by Black Lives Matter supporters for allegedly saying all lives matter. The national media fully ignored this story. So what's going on here? Just to give you the full background and the details, this was a young white woman in her early 20s who was engaged to a Hispanic man.
And had a child.
And had a very young child. They got into an argument with a group of Black Lives Matter supporters in Indianapolis. Words were exchanged. She told them all lives matter. After the argument was over, they later ambushed her and shot and killed her. From the Fox News affiliate in Indianapolis, this is the story. An Indianapolis mother was shot and killed along the canal early Sunday, marking the second homicide on the canal in a week. According to the victim's family, the shooting started when an argument over Black Lives Matter and language. Eventually, the two sides separated and walked away from each other until witnesses claimed the killers opened fire from a nearby bridge and then ran away. It was squashed, and they came up the hill and left, we thought, but they were sitting up there waiting for us to come out, and that's when she's got shot. She shouldn't have lost her life. She has a 3-year-old son that she loved dearly, says Ramirez. So you know how this goes. Hunter Wallace covered this at Occidental Descent. As with the white woman in Panama City Beach, Florida, or the Central Park Karen in New York City, or the McCloskeys, the two lawyers in St. Louis, or the couple in Martinez, California, who are facing hate crimes charges for painting over graffiti, or David Dorn in St. Louis, or the black kid who was murdered in Chaz or Chop, or the 8-year-old black girl who was shot and killed by Black Lives Matter in Atlanta. The things that matter in the new age of moral clarity in American journalism is solely the race of and the politics of the victim and the assailants, and whether or not that story can be of service to the narrative of racial justice. The so-called racial justice movement. If the story can be twisted into a narrative of racial justice and the media wants to tell it as a story about race in America, then the incident becomes a big deal, like George Floyd or Jussie Smollett or Bubba Wallace. However, other stories which contradict or complicate this narrative are completely suppressed. This has been going on for a long time. We've talked about it for years and years. We hardly even bother covering black on white crime stories like this anymore because they are so commonplace, they happen so frequently, we would never be able to cover anything else.
And by the way, if you want to keep up with that, check one of our daily reads called The Daily Ken. He does as good a job as covering that aspect of
Yeah, he does chronicle them still. But as I said on my Twitter feed, now in this age of catering to the mob, you've got just countless black and white savage attacks. They don't always end in murder like this one did, but there's so many on a daily basis. The glaring anti-white hypocrisy of the media has soared over the last couple of months to an all-time high. It used to be implicit that some black lives in some circumstances mattered more than the lives of other Americans to the media, but now it has become explicit. All lives do not matter. White lives matter least of all. Finally, black lives matter only, though, when tragic incidents can be used to cudgel, as a cudgel to demonize the police or beat white people over the head with guilt. But I guess the thing about this thing, and this was so tragic, as the father of young children myself, the kid, the 3-year-old kid, was asking his grandparents when they could go to heaven and bring mommy back. I mean, my God, that's just heart-wrenching. And you see people being charged with hate crimes for painting over graffiti. And then you have Black Lives Matter supporters. And you know they're Black Lives Matter supporters because they killed this young woman because she said all lives matter. Kill her. That's not a hate crime.
You know, it must be what it was like in the beginning of the Soviet Union when they would start getting people, arresting them on spurious charges, sending them off to gulags to work without proper clothing in, you know, Arctic temperatures and having them die off. This is what is happening now. We have, you know, you said it was a mob, but the mob are just foot soldiers. The Black Lives Matter people, the Antifa, they're just useful idiots. There's really a very small cadre of people that are calling the shots, deciding what is newsworthy and what's not in America now. And we know who they are. And this has been going on for ages. And this is showing you just how completely in control they are of the media. And if you're in charge of media, you're in charge of public opinion. Like the Orwellian statement, he said, he who controls the present controls the past, and he who controls the past controls the future.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the media, the courts, even corporations now, all have more power than the president, and they certainly have more power than the American people who have no power at all, well, and who have never able to vote on anything of any substance that matters.
Well, you know you've got a government that is dysfunctional when any random United States District Court judge, you know, they have probably 1,000 of them at least, has more power than the president of the United States. He can basically stop a president's initiative, for example, on DACA or on border security and stuff like this. Just find some wigged out liberal in the Ninth Circuit or in Hawaii, get them to issue an injunction against the federal government, and the federal government obediently comes to heel and waits for the thing to wind its way through the court system.
Well, if we thought
nothing gets done.
I really hate to even cover a story like that because I don't want to. I mean, we are not like our enemies. We are better than them. And I don't like to use stories like that as a political point maker. But I mean, it's just so tragic. People need to know that this is what's going on. And to compare and contrast how hate crimes are being applied and in cases where not only is it not a hate crime, I mean, it barely even makes local news. I mean, we found
why we argued against all of these things, or why I would have had we had a radio show back in the 60s and whatnot. For example, it's just the hate crime law is only applied against whites.
There are many more.
There are even more, many more black on white or non-white on white crimes, hate crimes, that never get prosecuted. Likewise, the Civil Rights Movement of 1964 prohibited racial discrimination. But the only people that get prosecuted by the EEOC or sanctioned are white people. There's plenty of black-on-white or non-white-on-white racial discrimination. In fact, it is codified in the federal law. It's called affirmative action. That's the official policy of the EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is the enforcement arm of the 64 Civil Rights Act.
Well, listen to this, Keith. They were talking about, I got the exact quote now, the Texas Rangers, the historic Texas Rangers, were violent agents of white supremacism. Listen to what's going on over here in the UK now. And we've got it bad here, God knows. But listen to the UK, talking about who gets arrested, what stories make news. This made national news over there. In West Midlands, that's a jurisdiction over there in the UK.
In the middle. To the west.
Anyway, it said on their official Twitter account for the West Midlands Police in big block letters, arrested. We were alerted to a series of racist messages sent to a soccer player, in other words, today. And after looking into it and investigating, we have arrested a 12-year-old boy. He has been taken into custody. Thank you to everyone who raised the alarm about this. Racism will not be tolerated. So, yeah, police department over here. Now, how many thousands of young girls have been gang raped and sex trafficked in the UK? The police swoop in, though, to arrest a 12-year-old boy for sending messages that they deem to be racist and then charge him with a hate crime.
He must be the English version of Al Capone, James.
Keith, that's sick.
I know, and what they are winking at and nodding at and turning a blind eye to is even sicker. Like you said, the sexual exploitation of really teen pubescent and prepubescent
can't
girls.
Mention that. Can't mention that because it was non-whites doing it to whites. Now, can you imagine if it was a group of whites gang raping and trafficking young girls of color, quote unquote? But and this thing that we talked about a moment ago with the shooting at the mall of that young mother, can you imagine if it was three white guys arguing with a black couple about Black Lives Matter and they ended up blasting them away? You think you had heard about that?
No, you wouldn't have.
No. Do you think you would have heard about that if it had been the white people shooting some young black mother after getting into an argument?
It'd be like the James Byrd thing where you got a couple of guys in a pickup truck that got in a fight with somebody and dragged him behind and killed him. You have a death there, and that was the biggest news story in America for a long time back when it happened. I think it was in the 80s or something. But then this murder of a lovely, nice mother, young mother, for saying something as innocuous as, no, all lives matter, not just black lives matter. That is, that's worthy of a immediate death penalty execution by the left. See, that's the brave new world we live in now, James.
Well, I mean, again, this is child's play, but you reverse the races. This is so much bigger and so much more in your face and so much more planned out than the whole George Floyd thing that started this whole mess. I mean, it just defies belief, but not a word because it doesn't fit the narrative. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Another hour of the political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.